RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Monday morning iced coffee and rage, Val.
And me, Beans, but we're also joined with a very special guest. Introduce yourself, guest, because people will be happy to hear from you.
Hi, my name is Zach Voorhees, and I'm the Google whistleblower.
Wow. Yeah, no, big surprise, I'll tell you. This is a development of the last 10 minutes. So I'm really happy to have Mr. Voorhees here.
Me too. Hey, listen, your life has got to have been, let's start there, pretty crazy over the past couple weeks, months. When did they actually, well, you tell the story, but I'm interested to know when they figured you out and how.
Yeah, so I was planning on laying low after the first undercover story that was done by Project Veritas, where I came out anonymously and told the world that Google was not what people thought that it was, that it was a biased company that was bent on interfering with elections. And so I returned back to San Francisco, and I was, you know, going forward with my life. And then what happened is that Google was able to figure out that it was me. Their law firm sent me a letter that wanted to grab, like, my laptop, all my data, my backups, and go through it. And shortly after that, an online insider trolled me and outed me on a low comment thread. And so at that point, I realized, oh no, they know who I am, and they're going to be, you know, coming after me. And the attorneys that I talked to told me that the letter that they had sent me was the first step in Google ruining my life, and that they would pull no stops in order to financially ruin me, that they would lie in court saying that I had hacked their systems in order to grab their documents, which is not true. Everything I've disclosed was publicly available to every full-time employee inside of the company. And so I decided that I was going to let Google know, since they knew who I was going to let them know that I was intent on taking all of their data and disclosing it to the public in the event that they assassinated me. And so I put up what's called a dead man switch and put that up on Twitter, which is still there. You can go to my account and see it.
Just tell people your account real quick, just in case they don't know.
Yeah. My account name is Perpetual Maniac. If you try to search for Zach Voorhees, you won't find me because I am shadow banned.
Perpetual Maniac.
Perpetual.
Oh, okay. I found you.
Yeah. Please follow me.
Oh, you follow me.
Yeah, I do.
Well, I'm following you back.
You're
now
quite popular, Frank.
Huh. Yes, he is.
This is great. Okay. Well, we follow each other now.
Yeah. So I put up a dead man switch warning Google that I'm going to disclose all of their information in the event of my untimely death. And then the next day I get swatted. Now, for the listeners that don't know what swatted means, that means that the SWAT arrives at your house. And what happened was Google decided that they were going to call in a quote-unquote wellness check. And they came to my house. I knew my rights. I just didn't answer the door. And the police decided to escalate. They called in a bomb threat because I had a can of denatured alcohol next to the gate of my door. They called in a bomb squad. They called in the FBI. And then they put snipers on the opposing rooftops. And I didn't know any of this was happening until I started hearing a helicopter circling around my house. At this time, my best friend was concerned that something might be going down because police had come to his house before they came to mine. And so he arrived in San Francisco. he noticed that the police had three blocks blocked off. So they had blocked off, you know, from 20th down to 22nd. And there's like a block, there's like a street in between.
Let me stop you for 1 second.
Yeah.
You mentioned your friend here and he was in a different state and they went to his house as well. Is it because
he was in a different city. So he lived in Richmond. I lived in San Francisco and I had listed his house as my address as a decoy.
Ah, well, and poor guy.
Yeah. So the police first came to his house and wouldn't leave him alone. They were really trying to get at me. So he actually called me up first before the police came to my house and said, yo, the police just came by and they really, really want to talk to you. And I think they want to arrest you. And so I was like, huh, well, I wonder if that means they're going to be at my house next. And 30 minutes later, knock, 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 they're at my house.
You know, Tracy, and I mean, and everybody else listening too, the whole swatting thing, it's one of those, it's for some people, it's an internet prank where especially it's done to live streamers where you want to swat somebody, you report them to the police for some really egregious crime so that they send over a SWAT unit so that hopefully you can catch on screen while somebody is streaming a video game or something, the door is kicked down and all that stuff. The problem is that people die this way.
Yeah.
So to think about this and to also hear Mr. Voorhees here talking about just preparing himself for possible death. I mean, this is some serious stuff.
How did that end up? Like, you know, when this was after the anonymous report, so they figured you out somehow. I mean, you know, whatever. So they figure you out. And then this happens when? A month after? A week after? How soon after?
I mean, they sent me a letter and then this happened about a week later.
Jeez.
So that's the way it is. The thing is that – so there's a little bit of backstory here. And the backstory is that, you know, when they sent me a letter asking to get all my data, I responded saying that I had retained their data. I had sent it to the Department of Justice, you know, because they had committed a crime. And so they knew that – they didn't know that I was the leaker, but they knew that I had retained some of their files and that I had sent it to law enforcement. And so the fact that they were able to put two and two together and realize that I was the Project Veritas leaker, you know, I was like, okay, well, they figured me out at this point. So
when did they let you go from the company then?
I actually resigned.
Okay.
I put in my resignation letter, I think, June 14th. And my official resignation date was June 28th, but they accepted my resignation within 24 hours and said there's no need to come into work anymore.
Hey, so. Zach, let me ask you something, because I think the first real round of all of this, these exposés and just pretty much exposing what's going on at Google, whether it be things that are technically written into the foundation of how they do things, or whether it just be like how James Damore showed us the very rigid culture there, where it's impossible for these people to even look at the biological facts of nature, and they want to be able to just steamroll humanity in some way, in a cultural way, and within the culture within the company. So we know that you bring that mindset of the world and you bring it together with the technical know-how to actually shape the way that technology is used. There's going to be problems there. And here you are pretty much providing the most in-depth look into how that worldview has pretty much permeated the way that the technology is designed and implemented. What are your – are you looking at this when you started seeing and putting all the two and two together and collecting all of this this awful information that you know was just off? Is that just a matter of you saying, hey, I want to live in this country and have it be free and open? Or is there any kind of You have what's your personal politics, I should say?
Okay, so I consider myself to be a liberal. I went to Barack Obama's 2008 inauguration in Washington, D.C., and I became very disillusioned as Barack Obama, like, started toppling, like, country after country. I think he won a Nobel Peace Prize right before he destroyed Libya. And so I started becoming disillusioned, and I was like, what's going on here? What's going on here? I don't understand it. And for me, like, I've got this, like, obsessive quality that I have to understand something. It's what makes me a really great engineer. And so, you know, Google had this, you know, they had this front where they were like, hey, we're all about self-expression and expressing yourself through, you know, this open platform that we've given, you know, everyone. That's the reason why it's called, you know, YouTube and not our tube. And so, you know, as a liberal, I thought that Google was aligned with my value system. You know, that's the reason why I, you know, joined Google. I thought that they were ideologically aligned with, you know, what I thought was important. And I think what most people think, you know, is important, because everyone loves freedom. And so that's my political alignment. The reason why, you know, so I think it's important to understand exactly what happened at Google. What happened at Google is that they did a complete 180-degree change right after Donald Trump won the election.
This was my next question, so you're a very smart man. Keep going.
And what happened was, you know, right after Donald Trump had his surprise win, the company had this, like, moment where, I mean, I think I remember it as TGIF, which is a weekly meeting that they have for the entire company. And at this TGIF, the company talked about how racism, sexism, and misogyny were the reason why Donald Trump got elected. And that, you know, clearly, like, fake information was used to do that, fake news. And also that Russia hacked the election. Mm. And this is really weird because, you know, this narrative was being countered with real information, you know, such as you were providing, Tracy, and America owes you a debt of gratitude for that.
Well, thank you.
But as the facts were coming out, it turned out that the Russian collusion narrative was fake news and that it was all made up. It was all bought in by the deep state in order to try to get rid of Donald Trump. And so what happened is that the company went from this really great company to clown world. And it didn't really seem like any of the facts were reaching the executives.
Do you think that they were getting this directive from elsewhere, or that they just made an internal decision that this is what they were going to do? Because it obviously flies in the face of everything logical. So that's my weirdness. And I know we've got CrowdStrike alignment here, too. So I'm curious about that as well.
Yeah. At this point, like, I've done enough digging with the different social media companies that I have my suspicions that the executives really aren't in control of the company, that they are more like figureheads, delivering on a narrative from the controllers that sit above them and kind of operate from the shadows. If you apply Occam's razor, then that's the conclusion that one would come to.
I'm with that one. You just saw the New York Times. I was going to cover a little bit on this with tonight's show, but the New York Times, that audio, that information coming out of there, where they pretty much said, we retooled and repurposed our entire paper to covering this Russia collusion nonsense. And now that is completely been disproven, and they were able to get themselves all these awards for their stupid coverage along the way, now they have to switch and completely refocus on trying to sell racism. So you tell me, is that even a newspaper, or is it just some kind of a propagandistic booster club? Now I'm
it's Pravda.
Yeah, again, and I'm applying that to everything you're saying right now with Google.
If you can't answer this, that's fine. But what did you see, maybe not specifically, that makes you believe that from the inside? And also, if you could clarify, you were a senior engineer. Were you up higher than most? Did you have a staff under you? Explain that as well.
Yeah. So there was a meeting for the company. Now, I want to clarify that, you know, I work for Google and Google owns YouTube. And right. And when I left, I was a senior software engineer for YouTube. But I've been with Google for 8 years. I started off with Google Earth. So if anyone has any, you know, questions about that, you know, I started off working for Google and I ended up working for YouTube for the last 3 years.
Got it.
Okay. YouTube had an event called Steam, and the Steam event is for employees and some insiders within the industry. And Susan Wojcicki, the CEO of YouTube, went on stage and she delivered the speech about how Google was going to change the definition, or they were going to start deranking fake news and they were going to start boosting authoritative content. And the video was so horrifying and so baffling that I recorded it and disclosed it as part of the dump. And if someone just wants to see the video without going through the dump, they can go to my Twitter, Perpetual Maniac, and they can see it as one of the last, I think, 15 posts.
When you walk into this event, do they confiscate your cell phones, or are they so brazen that they assume every single person there is a mindless zombie who agrees with them?
The latter.
Wow.
All right. Because you ever see that picture where like everyone is like saluting to the Nazis and there's like that one guy with his hands like underneath them going, I'm not going to participate in that. That yeah. guy's me, literally.
Wow.
So, so pulling yourself aside though, how would you estimate what kind of a contingent of people inside of Google, I guess, in any department, in all departments, what contingent out there is thinking like you? What, no matter their personal political views, well, how many people like you are starting to see that company practice actually runs contrary to the desire to actually live in a free nation?
Right. So I would separate people into like the three groups. Most of the people are true believers, and that's like a quote-unquote true believers. That's a term meaning no matter what the company does, they'll believe in it. Then there's like this middle layer, which is kind of, I guess, the next, you know, next block, which is they're like, this is kind of weird, not entirely understanding, but there's a lot of smart people, you know, that believe in this, so I'm just going to sort of go along with that, but this is really weird, and that's like the next sizable, you know, majority. And then there's the slim minority of people that are like, this is really, really messed up. They are, you know, controlled by someone above the executive level, and they're trying to overthrow America, but, you know, and they're just sort of waiting around trying to figure out what's going on. Some of them are organizing. You know, there was a small Patriot network that I was part of.
Wow.
And we were all just like, okay, I guess they're going to try to push this into communism again. And those are the ones that, you know, have read a lot of these dystopian novels like 1984, you know, Brave New World, and have, you know, understand the horrors of communism. And so we've seen this pattern before, mm-hmm. and we know what the steps are that will deliver sort of like a communist revolution. And so we're the ones looking in at this going, okay, well, they're clearly going for an overthrow move of the governments. And every single time they advance that agenda, we're like, okay, this is another step. This is the way that they're going. And what I realized is that as one of these people, one of these minority people that knew history and knew what they were doing, I had the unique ability to provide the evidence that they were doing this. And I also had the know-how or the mindset to capture this. And because people, you know, in this company are so indoctrinated, I mean, they've got internal classes that they have to indoctrinate people by telling them that they're racist. And that test was called the implicit association test. And it was developed at Stanford, and then it was so discredited that Google stopped making it mandatory for their employees. And so tests like this is how they indoctrinate their employees to think that they're, you know, bad people and that they need to atone for themselves by eliminating bias from the search results.
This is sick.
A mind fuck. Sorry,
No, it's fine. It's fine. We're free on this podcast. Trust me, Frank is here. That's all
I'm
you need
here.
To know.
It's me. Don't worry.
So no, I mean, this is scary. It really is. Like, we went through some of these documents. Can we like maybe touch on a couple of the things that you were
able
to grab?
I just
want to finish this one little thing though.
Oh, please do.
So I'm in the mindset of knowing what's happening, that they're moving towards like this communist revolution and that they're like ramping up racism and all this other stuff to destabilize America. And so what I realize is that, well, since these people are indoctrinated, they have no idea that the things that they're saying are just absolutely extreme. And as a result, all of this information, like they just said it and they just put their design documents on the public internal internet. And it was just there for everyone. So I grabbed it. I grabbed everything that I could find. I would download a paper. I would read it. I would find the keywords. And then I would go and grab the related papers. And I repeated this over and over and over again until I had, you know, over 1,000 pages of documents that I could, you know, deliver to the media and to law enforcement, you know, and to the Trump administration and say, here you go. Here's all the evidence that you need in order to do discovery in a judicial setting. So that's where we are today.
I mean, what you've done here is we started, like I said, we were looking through some of this stuff, the lists that would trigger a...
Oh, yeah, the suppression terms.
Like, yeah, would trigger an applet or a little program or whatever you want to call it. It was called the Twiddle, I believe.
Yeah.
The suppressed
blacklisted phrases.
Yeah, so I have a couple questions about that, and maybe you can lend some insight. Now, obviously, what I found really interesting was, of course, there were a bunch of conservative or truth-based outlets on there. But you know who else was on there? Media Matters.
Yeah, so you're talking about the Google Now blacklist.
Yeah.
Media Matters was on there. But, I mean, Media Matters is pretty extreme. But most of the people that were blacklisted were conservative sites on that list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and explain how that works. If somebody searches for that, I mean, you just released a Medium article this morning that we'll link in the show notes for people as well, showing how they mess with autocomplete and they say that it's because nobody's really searching for that, but then if you compare it to Google Trends, which is available, that's not the case. And it's basically like they're operating in plain sight here. You can check them, and it's almost like you're screaming into a forest and no one hears you. Do you agree?
I do. And they've been slandering everyone that points it out as a conspiracy theorist. And it doesn't even matter if you're like, you know, the chief editor of Psychology Today that's doing a credible study on the bias. They're going to call him as just like, that person's name is Jeffrey Epstein. Robert Epstein.
I was going to bring him up.
Yeah. So they slandered Robert Epstein as a conspiracy theorist. And it's just like everyone's pointing out that the zebra has stripes and Google is saying, no, it's a white horse. And it's just ridiculous, right? It's just they're trying to tell us something that we all know to be true is not true. And so I want to talk about the blacklist, the Google Now blacklist. So Google Now is a product that was kind of a fusion of different Google services. And one of the things that did was it had news. So it would show you like what you wanted to see. But they had a blacklist on it. And so when people were searching for news or if people wanted to just browse news, certain sites that Google had deemed undesirable did not make it to the Google Now search bar. And this Google Now, I think it exists on... it's built into Android, and it existed on iPhone if you wanted to download it. But that was the blacklist. And there's I think, a total of 11 blacklists now that have been identified. Robert Epstein has identified 9 in his research, and I've released 2 blacklists, the YouTube Query Twiddler blacklist and then the Google Now blacklist.
Now, on the YouTube one, and, you know, me doing a lot of my work up until recently on YouTube, I have obviously experienced ridiculousness. But what really struck me was the, like, hundreds of Vegas-related blacklisted terms that I just don't understand the overkill. Why do you – I mean, we don't want to get into a Vegas discussion, but why that one topic over so many of the other things that have happened?
There was over 12 pages of Vegas terms.
It was weird.
Yeah. And there's another bug report that I put in there that shows a whole bunch of additional fake news related to the Vegas shooting. And you'll see, if people go through, they'll see pages and pages and pages of blacklisting terms for Stephen Paddock and different misspellings of his name. Mm-hmm. And also blacklisting how Stephen Paddock was anti-Trump.
Yeah.
And it's just bizarre how all these false, sorry, I don't want to say that. All
no,
these
that's fine.
Shooting, yeah. So, you know, a lot of these things that people allege are false flag shootings, all of them end up in this blacklist over and over and over again. And you can see that Google's clearly suppressing people searching for, you know, David Hogg, crisis actor. And yeah. it's like, why does Google have, you know, a dog in this fight?
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this before too, and I'm glad you brought up Dr. Robert Epstein, because even going back to the whole New York Times thing, where we know how they retooled their entire paper, but the thing with New York Times is they cater to a very small group of people, and with the New York Times, you have to go out there and you have to buy a paper, you have to go to their website, you have to seek out what they are writing. That's totally up to you. When a search engine is engaged in this stuff, though, or these technology companies are engaged in this stuff, it is able to impact the way that people see the world in very unsuspecting ways. And one thing that, you know, prior to Dr. Robert Epstein showing up before the Senate Judiciary Committee, I had spent going back to at least 2014 or 15, looking into the early studies that were being done into search engine manipulation effect and how it could impact the voting habits of certain demographics in excess of 60% sometimes. And the worst thing about all this that I've learned is that in 75% of the time, the people who are being manipulated by these schemes don't even know that they're being affected, whether it be by peripheral headline flashing, suggested things along the side. Everybody, we're already very, very accustomed to taking it.
I want to talk about this because this is super, super, super important.
Yeah, because and let me just keep one more thing in mind when you do. It's about Epstein. He said that between 3 to 10 million votes may have been impacted for 2016. If you're saying that Google really tightened the screws after Donald Trump won, what the hell could possibly be in the works for 2020?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think that people need to understand how Google was manipulating people. And an important piece of background study is the psychology study known as the Ash Experiment. And the way that the Ash Experiment worked is you get a volunteer to participate in a psychology experiment. They go into a room and they think that there are a bunch – and they see a bunch of other people and they think that they're also volunteers for this psych experiment. But in reality, everyone else is an actor, okay, is very important. There is an instructor who goes to the chalkboard and he takes his chalk and he writes a line and then he writes a larger line. And he asks the classroom, which line is larger? Now, here's the important thing. Every single actor gives the wrong answer. So you know what the true volunteer does?
Changes.
He changes his answer and he also gives the wrong answer. Mm. And this study has been replicated over and over and over again, but it has one tiny weak point. If one of the other actors is assigned to give the correct answer, the Ash experiment effect is almost completely broken.
So it just takes one other person.
Just takes one.
Wow.
Yes. And so what Google has figured out is that if they can manipulate just the search suggestions, then they can change a lot of people's minds. Now, why the search suggestions? Well, what Google stated is that these search suggestions or search predictions that you get when you're typing in a search query into the Google bar are generated from user data. So you see what other people are searching for, and that auto-completes your search. And so when people go and they search for something, if they see other things pop up, they're like, well, this is what everybody else is thinking. And so, you know, this relates to the Medium article that I posted today. Google went in and deleted political content so that it wouldn't autocomplete. And specifically, when someone's searching for example, Clinton body count, because there's a lot of people that have died around Clinton. So when they search for Clinton body count, it used to autocomplete. Well, now they've removed it. And they've removed it such that when you type in Clinton body, it doesn't autocomplete. And, you know, this has been going on, you know, for a while, but they've started to ramp up this effect, and they've started getting really reckless with the bias so that it's no longer even has a veil of plausible deniability. So for example, you go into Google and you type in men can, and it will auto suggest men can have babies and can have periods. Mm-hmm. And it's just these weird social justice terms. And, you know, people that, you know, are kind of asleep still, they'll think, well, that's just what other people are searching for because I hear it all over into the media. And I can disprove that because there's other Google services that don't have this bias. So if people go to trends.google.com, that service will show you the true search results of what everyone is searching for. Well, not the search results. They'll show you what everyone is searching for and how popular a search phrase is.
How long before they change that, or is it so integral to their marketing that they can't?
They're going to get rid of it. I mean, it's like the biggest thing that shows their it contradicts them so much that I don't think that it's going to be around much longer. In fact, I really urge the audience members that are listening to the show to go and start finding Google lying and show them how the search suggestions are not real, that they're manufactured, and to see what trends.google.com really says about how popular certain phrases. So you can type in Ron Paul, you can type in Trump, you can type in your famous politician, and you can see what Google is auto-suggesting. And if there's a difference, then you got to figure out, well, where is Google lying, right? And so this is what my whole Medium article today is about, is, you know, Clinton there is no autocomplete for Clinton body count, but there is an autocomplete for Trump body count. And then I've showed the graph.
It doesn't even make sense.
And then what I also have done is I've shown a graph showing that the Clinton body count is huge, while the Trump, you know, body count hardly trends at all.
Isn't that kind of a testament, though, to the fact that even though they have all this power, and obviously it's a massive problem that we cannot let go, they're losing?
They are losing. And the analogy I like to make is it's like a person that becomes diabetic, they become insulin resistant. And so the treatment is to give them more insulin. And if you replace insulin with fake news and manipulation, you kind of you understand what's going on. The people are starting to doubt the narrative. And so in order to compensate, they have to push more misinformation and more propaganda in order to maintain control.
Mm-hmm. Wow. This is pretty crazy. There was some other stuff that you released that I thought was absolutely terrifying in terms of the psychological experiments, so to speak, that they're doing. Can you talk about that a little bit too?
Yeah, so I don't have the paper in front of me, but I think it's the title something like Induced Psychological Distress Caused by Algorithmic Discrimination.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. And so this is a psychology paper that was authored in December of 2016, 1 month after the election of Donald Trump. And the paper is bizarre, but what it does is it talks about the different stresses that people experience when they're being discriminated against by algorithms. And it talks about how people can have their their discomfort alleviated by giving them knobs and buttons and dials that don't actually do anything. In other words, they're giving them elevator buttons, right, that light up but don't actually close the door. And this is one of the things that the paper is exploring, is how can we still continue to discriminate against our users, but alleviate some of their pain. Another interesting thing about this paper is that they said that under certain stressors, people's buying habits increases. And so one of the things that they explored was how train crowding caused ad sales to increase.
Wow. So in other words, if you're in a train going to work and you're on your phone, you're more prone to buy if the train is crowded than if it's empty?
That is exactly correct.
Wow.
And so part of this paper, one of their what they talk about is how to simulate that crowdedness so that they can increase ads.
Oh, how awful. What an awful thing. That is,
yeah.
You know, this is why Bill Hicks, you're Bill Hicks, that one, which I forget which special it was, but when he starts telling everybody in the audience if they're in marketing and advertising to kill themselves, and he keeps going, he says, "Oh, you think I'm kidding? No, seriously, kill yourself." You start thinking about this, how horribly wrong, how far it's gone. Just to think about, oh my gosh, the train crowding thing alone makes my stomach turn.
Right, you know, and once you start seeing these papers, you read enough of them, you start realizing that Google thinks of us as units that we could be programmed.
Yeah,
and they've actually stated it twice in two different major, you know, internal publications, I want to call them, where they say that like news media is like aggregated and filtered and yada yada yada, and the end result is that people like us are programmed.
I beg to differ.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's this blank slate theory taken to the extreme.
So let's get into, I'm obviously a little bit curious about, what did you do at YouTube?
So I was a senior software engineer at YouTube, and I worked on the embedded YouTube app. And so I brought the YouTube embedded app to the PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox. And so Xbox One. And it was obviously, it wasn't just me. There was a whole team. I also did infrastructure, so automated testing of those game consoles and how do you have a host machine, you know, connect over a network connection and operate the machine so it can load in a new version of the program and run all the tests and make sure that everything was working just fine. So that was my role.
That's a big deal. It really is.
It's a big deal. I mean, our product was responsible for 10% of YouTube's total traffic.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, that's huge. You know, how many people are watch? My family watches YouTube on gaming console. So we use what you designed every day.
Yeah, you can look at that. You're like, oh, Zach
did this. It's pretty crazy. So, you know, YouTube became almost based off that video that you showed everyone. And I still can't believe the hubris of how they just left this stuff up there thinking that nobody would possibly do what you did and take initiative to actually blow the whistle on this stuff. That's one of the things that, like, they're just so cocky. I have one more question on that vein first. Let's stop there and then we'll go to YouTube. What do you think would be a solution to this? Like, how would anybody, other than, I mean, is it, obviously this is criminal because it has to do with, you know, election and propaganda and all that stuff. But do you think that arrests would even change anything at this point?
Arrests?
Like if people at Google got arrested for interfering in elections or whatever.
Yeah.
Would that change anything there at all?
I mean, absolutely. You know, Google is operating its election interference, not just in the United States, but also in Ireland and also in Brazil, and it looks like they had a hand in overthrowing Egypt because the guy who did it was a Google employee. These people have some explaining to do. The executives need to be held responsible for their election interference. And my hope by delivering this to the Department of Justice Antitrust Division is that the law enforcement can go in knowing where the documents are located and start looking at this and start questioning people and figuring out who was responsible for banning. So for example, in the case of Ireland, who's responsible for banning the search phrase, the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution of Ireland.
They didn't want people to see.
They didn't want them to see because Google had a bone in the fight in overturning their abortion referendum. And so they literally banned people from searching for the constitutional amendment of their country.
Wow.
This is
That's
crazy.
Criminal. That is absolutely criminal. And so, you know, and then I found out that, you know, the Google had been caught engaging in election interference in Brazil. And I posted that to my Twitter account. And the reason why we know this is because the Supreme Court of Brazil found them guilty. And there's evidence of them taking payments and signing a contract saying that they would slander and boost negative articles about the current president of Brazil.
This is pretty crazy. I mean, you think about it in the case of the United States, you don't even think about global immediately.
No, yeah, you don't think it's like a game of dominoes. It really is. Like the whole world.
And the thing is that they also need, and most importantly, they need to be held account for what they did. I mean, I caught Google deleting dictionary words in order to make a Trump tweet sound crazy.
Kafefe.
So the story behind that is Donald Trump went to Saudi Arabia and he came back. And then I think around May 25th, 2017, he made a tweet that said, the news is fake, kafefe, mm-hmm. something like that. And then an executive within the company made a design document saying that they were going to replace the word kafefe, which was nonsense, according to a New York Times article that just, you know, had posted a few days earlier. And they were going to replace kafefe with a shrug icon. And so, unfortunately, the shrug icon never went in. And what happened is that kafefe was just deleted. Now, the problem was that not only did they have to delete kafefe once, but they actually had to delete kafefe twice because the AI was smart enough to do a phonetic transliteration of the word and still find its Arabic counterpart and translate that.
Wow.
So, you know, it's funny because the design document says that, you know, the New York Times says this word doesn't make any sense and that President Trump is doing nonsense in his tweets. Now, on the other hand, the AI is smart enough to be able to translate it twice. And so they really, really pushed it out of that translation engine. And then right after that happened, the New York Times started writing articles saying that Trump was mentally unfit and they were trying to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove him.
Those came up first when you searched.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm sitting here looking at this. I'm like, this is clown world.
Yeah.
This isn't reality. They're trying to manufacture, you know, using all the points that they have of control, they're trying to manufacture a false reality. And, you know, if not even the president is safe from this interference, then what about Joe Schmo American? You know, how are they going to stand up to this colossal titan? So that was the point that I was like, okay, once I saw that, I was like, okay, I need to take all this information. I need to start distributing it to, you know, a media organization that has the integrity to not stab me in the back, but instead disclose this to the American public. And the only one that, you know, the only one that I found that had enough integrity to do this, you know, and take it seriously was Project Veritas. And James O'Keefe is a person of immense integrity, and I have so much respect for him, and I've never met anyone with as much integrity as James O'Keefe. And so that's the reason why I, you know, leaked it to Project Veritas and the reason why I disclosed it through their, you know, their outlets.
It was a smart decision for sure. Mm-hmm. I've in my little corner, I know a lot of people that have, I don't know him personally, but I've never ever once heard a bad word about James O'Keefe. And he's always been really nice to anyone who comes up to say hello. And, you know, that's the limit other than looking at his work, which is plain. I mean, you know, when people have integrity in what they do, you can see that. And you can obviously see his passion and why he's doing what he's doing. And it's clear. One more question, because I could ask you questions for hours. You also provided like almost like print screens of bios of different employees.
And yeah.
I was a little puzzled by that. Can you explain why you included those?
So I want to take the moment here to apologize. That was not intentional. I was doing it's called Humint for, you know, in the intelligence circles. So basically research on who were the operators of this censorship machine. And I think one of the people disclosed in there is Jen Janai. And if you notice with Project Veritas, they actually did an undercover sting operation on her. And she admitted that Google was, you know, was going to try to stop the next Trump situation. And so, we were on a time crunch. I didn't catch it. They didn't catch it. And it was part of the disclosure. So if one of those people are listening right now, I'm sorry that, you know, you were part of this document dump. Also, shame on you for trying to, you know, rig the elections, and shame on you for, you know, willingly, you know, colluding with Google to violate the employment laws of the state of California.
Hey, I mean, you know, I don't feel bad.
I wish that it wasn't so bleak as far as the people left behind who might be just like you, Zach, that have seen it or maybe are at this point a little bit more encouraged to contribute to the disclosure that you helped trigger. But from what you described, that the company has really taken great care in creating a loyal cult-like culture over there. That's something right there that's a little bit more disconcerting to me. And it actually mirrors my fears for the overall. Like, we were talking about arrests before. We were talking about, obviously, legal justice needs to be served in places where coup attempts have been attempted, where we have any kind of interference in international elections or domestic, whatever the hell it is. Justice needs to be served. Things need to work. And they have to happen quickly, too. It can't be tied up in litigation for years and years and years. And then one day we get this light little slap on the wrist and nobody even cares anymore. At that point, it's like, hey, let go of it. But the problem here is culture to me. Even if we were to get rid of the couple of thousand people in government right now that are all on the same team in either manipulating public opinion in front of cameras or in tying up legislation and anything in process in the basements of any of our executive agencies. The problem here is that people on the ground approve of this horrible behavior now in numbers that we cannot ignore. The culture that you have described over there at Google is the culture that is created and perpetuated on college campuses, that we're seeing largely on social media and elsewhere in entertainment and politics. I mean, that's my, what do you think about the overall culture that I think is allowing this to go on with such impunity?
You know, there's a big change that's happening right now. Okay. I think we all see it. There is, you know, whenever you look at communist revolutions, you see the same pattern of political correctness. And what one has to realize is that this isn't just something that's organic. This is something that is planned with an agenda. And it's clear to me that agenda has been broken at the highest level and that we're heading towards a new world. Globalism is fracturing. And what's going to happen is that we're going to instead have a multipolar regional world. And as a result, the people that were in control of that globalist one world government structure, they're kind of on the run. You know, I keep on hearing stories of, you know, different members of the Rothschild family being, you know, mysteriously dying. And I suspect that what's happened is that there's been that there's a new sheriff in town, and that the world is like the United States is now breaking away, and that the UK is breaking away, and that there is a return of sovereignty that I've never seen or witnessed before in my lifetime. And so
I'm with you.
I think that that culture, you know, that existed, this, you know, that wants to put everyone into a prison is going away, and it doesn't want to go away quietly. And so what's happening is it's very upset, and it's been grown in an information bubble. That bubble's been popped, and now they're getting information that's contradicting their worldview. And they're being very, very, very upset about everything that's happening. And as their cognitive dissonance gets triggered, they become violent, they act out, and they're scared because they think that some weird, false, fake news idea has just taken over the United States. And, you know, for them, I hope that most of them wake up, but I know that no matter what happens, that 5% will always remain asleep. And I have some of those friends in the 5%, and it's really sad to see them because their mind invents all these different, like, you know, it does gymnastics in order to sort of maintain that, you know, the Russians hacked the election, that Trump is not a legitimate president, and that the people that voted for him are all racists, and that half of America are just deplorables. And that's their worldview. And, you know, I hope that as we continue to turn to, you know, this new light, that many of them will find comfort, and they'll understand that there's a new opportunity. There's been a lot of technology that's been suppressed, and now that technology is becoming available, the alternative health market is just exploding with advanced, you know, nutraceuticals. You know, I take a vitamin stack that's about 30, you know, vitamins deep, and I feel great. And all this information is now coming out. You know, cancer treatments, all of this, like it's a new renaissance. And so I'm sorry, I kind of got off into the weeds there, but
No.
That was it.
It's good, yeah. Because it's, you know, like that's the way I'm on the train with you. I, you know, I see all these, a lot of people out there super negative about stuff. And, you know, Frank, we kind of butt heads about this sometimes, and you're more amenable to saying, you know what? Hey, you know, I'm feel, you know, maybe it's possible that, but you, I am of the, just in terms of what I feel and how I gauge what's going on and what I see, I'm in your camp, as well with the positive changes that are happening. Listen, let's talk about a couple things real quick before we wrap. What's next for you?
According to the whistleblower networks, I need to stay in the spotlight for my safety. Whistleblowers tend to die under mysterious circumstances. And so my goal is to stay in the light and to talk about what Google has done. And you know, because the important thing is that we leave a world for our collective children and give them the same opportunities that were passed to us. And if we don't fight for that, then we deserve to lose it. Mm-hmm. And I believe that America deserves to have as much freedom and sovereignty as possible. And so I'm going to continue that mission, and I'm going to continue that outreach. And it's really resonating with America, and that's a great thing. And I think that we've got a really bright future ahead of us.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, hey, Frank, you got a last question before we go?
No, I'm happy that people like Zach are out there, because I'll tell you, in this new war, in this new renaissance, because I've said I want, if I can do anything and say that in the 2050s, 2060s, when we're all retiring and getting ready to transition into the next life, I hope that we can all look back and say I was at least a part of what was a new renaissance, a new enlightenment in some way. And I believe that everybody's doing their part, and people like Zach are very
important,
very, very important right now, especially just on the engineering, the technology, and people who are actually able to give us the explanations for everything that maybe people like you and I, Tracy, aren't as equipped to explaining, but we can still feel in our guts that something's not right. But like, for example, Zach, leading up to 2016, nobody can tell me that Hillary Clinton and the Democrat Party had momentum or enthusiasm on their side. But on the other hand, because of their control in media and control in social media and within their own party and the electoral process for the Democratic primaries, they were able to pull one over people's eyes. And after they stole the primaries, they told the rest of the country it was a 98% chance that Hillary was going to win the general. And then, of course, came the big slap in the face. And after that, I think that was really that watershed moment where we were able to start. It was almost like clipping the end of a cigar in a very bad way. And then all of a sudden, the cigar starts flaking apart. And you start realizing what the cigar was the entire time. It was a cheap piece of shit. And I'll tell you, what you have provided is a better understanding of what people like Tracy, myself, and a lot of the people who listen only could ever have gone off of a feeling in our guts to say that something wasn't right.
Thank you for that. Thanks for having the courage to stand up and do this. And, you know, thank you for putting your life in jeopardy, as crazy as it is that we have to talk about that. I think the country owes you a debt of gratitude and even elsewhere too. So I really appreciate you spending an hour with us this morning so early for you.
Thank you,
and Zach, listen, you don't even need an invite to call into my show. You want to stay public, just call in, and whenever the hell you feel lonely, just call in.
I may take you up on that offer. So.
All right, man.
Awesome. Hey, listen, thanks so much. And we'll be in touch with you, obviously. And I'll do what I can to help you stay out in the forefront on my end.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Thank you so much, Frank. It's been an absolute pleasure to be on here. And America owes you guys a debt of gratitude for exposing the truth.
Damn right. So, have a great day.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
You guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Monday morning coffee and rage. I'm a little bit more subdued. Monday morning subdued Val.
Listen, that was great. Yeah. Seriously. I'm so glad we did that. And that was a really, really good one. I hope a lot of people hear the show.
I think they should listen to it twice.
At least. Wow.
I think they should listen to it twice. That was great. For no preparation, that was fantastic.
My mind is always preparing, Frank.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm such a, I have a little, maybe it's just, it actually works against me, but I'm the type of guy that checks the house four times before we leave.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy is that like when we first started doing the show, you were like demanding like preparation documents. And I'm like, I just don't do things that way. I'm sorry.
It wasn't preparation. I just wanted to know what you were thinking about. So I made sure that I was sharp on whatever topic you wanted to cover for the show.
You gave up.
Yeah, then I just said to hell with it. I'm good at improv. I can improv. It's okay.
Yeah, and like if you put the President of the United States in front of me right now and they told me I had 10 minutes to interview him, I could have a conversation for it's all I do. I'm obsessed. It's a problem. I should probably get out more.
That right there, though, Tracy, I have. It's funny you bring that up, because even just last night in the shower, I was thinking, okay, I have 10 minutes with Donald Trump. What the hell? Or 15 minutes. What am I doing? Or a dinner with him. What am I doing? Because I can't. You can't go too hard, too heavy.
You're thinking about the president in the shower.
I'm thinking about what are the questions? What's the most important thing here? You know,
drink more coffee. You're not getting my jokes.
No, I got it. I got it. It just wasn't funny. you just made me think about things again.
All right. Sorry.
Okay.
I started your week off great. I'm really in the shitter now.
No, I'm good. We're all fine, Tracy. Okay.
We will see you on Wednesday. What are your questions before we go, though? Did you come up with any?
No.
You have no questions?
Actually, yes. Here's the thing. I have to keep my voice recorder on me is the problem. Because I always come up with things. And it's more so like, it's more so like imploring him to do certain things. Like to stay focused on something in particular. And it's usually constitutional. It's usually, and I don't know. See, I have to just keep my voice recorder on me because it's fleeting. It's fleeting. You can't get novelty. You can't reduce your questions down to novelties and all that stuff. It has to be really meaningful, not throwaway. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's good. It's good.
Yes.
Constitutional stuff for him would be good.
Yeah, he needs it.
Yeah. Well, that's it for today. We'll be back on Wednesday. I don't know how we'll beat this, but we'll try.
Until Wednesday, everybody.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with personalities like TV chef Brian Duffy, radio personalities like Ian Beckles and DJ Eakin, news and political pundits like Vincent Hill, and independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.